He has some kind of audiographic memory or something. Where it's not so much that he sees everybody. It's that he hears them. And he knows
he remembers your Brooklyn accent.
Yeah. Well, let me make it clear. It's not my accent. This is mostly how I talk. Now, I think I've kind of lost most of my accent, Jeffrey. You know, even though you now live in Carolina.
Oh, yeah, bullshit. No accent
there. Oh, bullshit.
There.
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition, one of the first editions in the brand new year, of Sell or Die. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer. You may know me as the author of The Little Red Book of Selling. And to my right, the lovely and talented...
Aw, I'm Jen Gluckow, founder and CEO of Sales in a New York Minute.
And we are the Sell or Die Bobbsey Twins.
This is Sell or Die.
And we're going to help you make more sales, make more money, and have a great time.
Sell or Die is your on-demand kick in the ass to help you make sales, make money, and feel great about your ability to be successful.
Well, that sounds like an all-encompassing thing.
Come on. It's a great description. It's your on-demand kick in the ass.
I just woke up. I feel like crap. Let me get a kick in the ass from Jeff and Jen.
Yep.
Well, Jeffrey and Jen.
Yeah. People who don't know you like to abbreviate or shorten your name, Jeffrey.
So what's up with you?
Oh, there's so much going on. It's going to be an amazing year. I can feel the economy picking up. I can feel the leads coming in. I can feel the sales being made. I'm optimistic about this year.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a great year. We're going to double. There's no doubt we're going to double, and we're going to go online. We're going to emphasize the social part of our business and the on-demand part of the Gittimer Learning Academy, and I think more people will be willing to take my advice when they're on the sales job. They're sitting in a waiting room waiting for the customer. You can take a little lesson on how to ask a question, on how to engage that person to immediately. There's phenomenal information available at the touch of your phone.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing what you can get these days. You know, we have a great show coming up. We have Lou Diamond.
Ooh, and Lou.
He... He is a phenomenal guest. I'm really excited to get into his episode. But before we do, let's talk about innovation.
Okay, because it's the Consumer Electronics Show week.
It is.
And they're innovating all over the place, correct?
Well, the companies that are exhibiting there are innovating.
And when the power is on.
Yeah, exactly.
They had a loss of power.
That's key that they need the power on at the Consumer Electronics Show.
Wouldn't you think they'd have like extra breakers somewhere?
Yeah. And when I read that, I just laughed out loud. Like legit laughed out loud.
It's funny.
They just brought in everyone just took their Tesla up to the to the show floor.
And plugged it in.
That's right.
That's funny as hell. But I think that if you look at the leaders in the world, some are absent, some are present. Apple absent. They get an A for absentee, or at least absence of innovation. But Google is present, and they're
Google and Amazon are kicking it.
They're going for it.
Oh yeah.
They want to listen to every single thing you say and then be able to comment on it. And they fake you out by telling you, "Oh, we can turn your lights on."
Yeah.
Just tell us everything.
I'm your assistant, but really I'm listening to everything going on.
Exactly.
Well, the interesting thing about Apple and the Consumer Electronics Show is that Apple never shows up to the Consumer Electronics Show, but they always seem to win the Consumer Electronics Show because all of the other companies gravitate towards Apple's ecosystem. And what you saw this year is that companies like Amazon and Google have put all of their weight behind, or seemingly all of their weight behind, voice-activated technologies, and they seem to have won the show this year.
Oh, yeah. They're putting voice-activated technology into literally everything, into your kitchen sink, into your refrigerator, into your stove, your lights, everything.
I think turn on your hot water is a little much. I think I'm more than capable of doing that, because if you're out of the kitchen and something's stopping your sink, it's going to flood.
You are capable, but Jeffrey, remember when we were traveling and we didn't want our pipes to freeze and someone had to come over and turn on all the waters? What if we could just press a button and say, "Oh, I'm in Paris, but I need to run my water now."
I think that you still need to have human interaction in order to make sure that what you're doing is safe. because there's all kinds of contingencies. If you turn the lights on and there's a short in the fuse, your house is going to burn.
And that's what people said about the internet when it first came out.
No.
They need to make sure that it's safe to put your credit card into it.
No. I want to make sure that my sink doesn't flood. And my credit card
has
nothing.
That's what your assistant is there for, your tech assistant.
Oh, they're going to tell you, I'm sorry, Jeffrey, I'm afraid I can't do that. Is that what they're going to say?
No, fill it up halfway. Huh? Come on. You tell it exactly what you want it to do.
Oh, I see. So you can fill it halfway, not just turn the water on.
Yeah, turn it on, turn it off.
All right, so why did this interest you, Jen?
Well, it's interesting to me because, first of all, Apple has always been the creator of innovation and creating tech lines that have never before
been crossed.
The thing.
Correct.
The
right?
iPhone, the iPad.
Exactly. Perfect examples. And it got me started thinking about salespeople and where's their innovation? What do salespeople need to be doing to become their own brand that's Apple-like?
Or to be separating from their competitor who they hate. What they try to do is draw a comparison to a competitor, which definitely doesn't do anything but bring up the price issue. Whereas if they were differentiators or innovators, then they could differentiate or innovate on value.
Oh, 100%. So Apple has created this brand and following of people and customer loyalty base of legit loyal customers who are waiting for the HomePod to come out. You said it yourself earlier, Jeffrey. You're not going to buy anything else. No. You're waiting for the overpriced HomePod to come out, which I'm totally cool with, even though it's $100 more, it might not be as good.
And the HomePod is the voice activated assistant in the home
Apple.
From Apple, yes.
Right. But the cool thing about that is it got me thinking, like, what about your customers?
Are they going to call it the iHome?
It's the HomePod.
Why? There's no I in it. iHome.
Well, actually, iHome is already a brand of tech that goes along with Apple products. But yeah, it's interesting, right? Because Apple has always been the market leader, and all of a sudden, at least in this voice activated technology, they seem to be perceived as the market trailer or the market waiter.
Maybe they have to have an
I.
They could put an
I
in there
for
this voice activated stuff. They could say I not home. And
oh,
that
man.
Way, if you're gone, you can lock your doors or you can close your garage door or you can, you know, whatever you need to do when you're gone.
Yeah.
Well,
like,
close your garage door?
I was just doing a conference for a company and it was out in Vegas and they weren't the tech market leader and their salespeople had to figure out how to get, they're in the healthcare space and their salespeople had to figure out how to keep their customers loyal. And how to keep their customers from switching to the healthcare tech company, that has all the bells and whistles. And so, if they could just follow Apple's ways,
I was
going to
ask what were their thoughts on
we
that?
We don't
want to
go
suggestions?
Too deeply into it. We can't reveal the customer; it's a trade secret. That kind of thing.
Right, but the general ideas.
The general ideas were their competitors.
Salespeople say, I can't make my sales this year. I can't make my quota this year.
Because I'm not tech innovative.
Because all the other companies out there have the stuff that we don't have and our customers are asking for it. Well, Apple's not saying we're not going to make our sales this year because the HomePod is delayed until some announcement in the middle of 2018, right? Apple is still going to make their numbers. They're still going to keep their shareholders happy and they're still going to have a loyal base of customers. And how are they doing that? They're doing that with reputation. They're doing that with branding. They're doing that by offering value and literally getting people like Jeffrey to wait for their product.
Yeah, they've established that base loyalty where they know that they can wait a certain amount of time. They don't have to be out in front on the watch market. They don't have to be out in front on the voice assistant market. They can come in and perfect. So I guess the question would be, and I know a lot of companies and a lot of salespeople ask this question too, when should I innovate and when should I focus on perfecting the processes that I have built currently?
I would say innovate when you have some kind of stability and you're robust enough to be able to withstand testing and use. If you're going to innovate, there's going to be flaws, there's going to be, you know, betas and all kinds of things that reflect the fact that it may not work.
So there's two kinds of innovation. there's company innovation, which is, I think, what you're referring to.
Yeah.
And then there's the salesperson innovation.
Yeah.
And just because your company may not be at the forefront of innovation at the moment,
right,
doesn't mean that you as the salesperson can't take responsibility and can't be innovative.
I agree. So let's look at it from the Apple perspective. Since 1984, all Apple has done is build great products and create customer loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally advocates, people that are willing to go to the mat for Apple. And so in
I'm
this
an Apple devotee, you?
Pardon?
I'm one of them.
I'm a 1984 guy. but here's this is the challenge. They've built that loyalty. They can say, hey, you guys, wait for 6 months. Other companies may not be able to.
Well.
So then it's up to the salesperson to be able to create some kind of a gap, and it's up to their relationship with their customer.
That's the key, is the relationship. If the salesperson, not the company, because you can't build a relationship with a company, so to speak, but if the salesperson has built that relationship, then they can keep the customer at bay. And it's the salesperson's job, in my opinion, if the company isn't being as innovative as the salesperson would like, you're the salesperson. Go be innovative on your own.
Go and visit and face-to-face talk with people. It's not an email. It's not a text.
No.
It's a face-to-face visit to your top 10 people.
Oh, yeah. And how – okay, let's talk about some ways that salespeople can be innovative with their clients.
A pen with your name on it.
Ooh.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
I've always wanted one of those.
A mouse pad. That would help. No, you have to walk in with ideas, and you have to walk in and bank your – value and your future worth on your present relationship. So if that's weak, then you're probably going to lose.
One of the things you were asking earlier, Jeffrey, and I'm going to bring it up because I heard you asking it, was are you going to send your customer a thank you note, or are you going to send them a $25 gift card to Starbucks or a $5 gift card to Starbucks and say, here's coffee on me. I'm not in your area today, but let's hop on a Zoom US, see each other face to face, and drink our coffee.
Zoom US is becoming the new Skype.
Oh, it's way better.
Yeah.
But that, to me, is innovative. If someone sent me that in the mail,
I'd do it.
I'd want to get on the call with them because it breaks the mold. Most people aren't doing that.
And give me $25 so I can have coffee and a donut. Because at Starbucks, it's $25 for coffee and a donut.
Their donuts aren't that good, but they're cake pops, on the other hand.
Yeah. And if innovation were easy, and if innovation didn't come without risk, then everyone would be innovating, right? I mean, there are challenges to innovation. And I like Jeffrey's point that if the relationship is strong between a client and the salesperson, then when that salesperson does offer an idea, if that idea does not work, if the relationship is solid, then it can sustain criticism. Same thing goes for Apple. If Apple releases a software that doesn't go exactly as they plan, maybe there's a bug, maybe there's a whatever.
There was a bug in the map system, remember, when the iPhone came out?
Yeah, they've had several of these issues come up.
I mean, what about the text that turned your text to different things?
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's a flaw.
People forgive them.
Right, exactly. You forgive. Yeah. That map thing sent you to a parking lot in Cleveland, I think, and it was... It was a horrible flaw, and they spent a couple months fixing it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't something where they just came out the next day and said, "Okay, download this."
Right.
It took a while.
Right.
And now it's unbelievable.
But they built their trust back almost immediately. I mean, they really built that. You know, when you have a flaw like that, you lose trust and you lose consumer confidence, and they were able to build it back. And your job as the salesperson is to not lose that trust.
I'm going to tell you that the Apple map is now the best map on the planet. When we landed in Paris and all of a sudden a notification came on our phone that said, oh, we have Paris on maps, just use it and everything's going to be fine. And we said, okay, I want to go here. And they show you how to walk to the metro, what car to stand on the metro, how to get out of the metro and then walk to your location. It tells you exactly how many minutes it's going to take. It's innovative.
Yeah, it's pretty cool how they do the transit.
And so I would have faith that the companies that aren't quite on the cutting edge the way they used to be will ultimately get there.
Mm.
And I've come to realize that, but you know, I'm brand loyal to Apple. It'll get there eventually.
Do you have any concern that they could become like BlackBerry?
like Slackberry.
Blockbuster.
You don't want to mention any names.
Yeah, Circuit City. Exactly.
No, I don't think they're that foolish. I don't. They're not. Apple is not resting on their laurels. They continue to put out things that will help them and help their customers. They know what, or they feel they know what a customer needs, and they put it out there, and people literally they grab it up mm-hmm. as fast as they possibly can.
Yeah.
There's always a line.
They've made that connection with their consumers.
Without a doubt. And people are in the store buying stuff.
So talking about connection.
Yeah.
Let's talk about our next guest.
What a segue, Jen.
Yeah, thank you. Thank
Very
you.
Well done. So we're about to introduce you to Lou Diamond, an incredible guy, is a dynamic speaker and master connector who will energize and motivate your organization. Your team, actually it's just you for the moment, will gain valuable tactics and strategies that you can use to boost performance. And Lou is capable of doing that as well as anybody on the planet. And we're going to hear from him right now.
Well, it's great to be on Sell or Die. The two of you, for those listening, don't get to see this, but they're wearing like matching kind of like red.
Oh, wasn't even planned.
Yeah, we didn't plan
it. Red colored outfits. Yeah. They look spectacular.
Twinsies.
I was talking. Do you know Steve Rizzo?
I do. Yes, very well.
Rizzo and I are really good friends. In fact, he's going to be here next Monday to shoot a video and do a podcast with us. But he was talking to me and Jen was like interjecting every time I was trying to say something. And she goes, I like how she talks. You should listen to her. I said, dude. And I wake up in the morning. I start listening to her. I have to listen to her until we fall asleep.
Not have to. You get to.
Oh.
Come
yeah,
on.
Love to.
Semantics
sorry, love
here.
To, yeah.
Semantics.
Semantics. You get to. All right. So here we are on Sell or Die. And I feel honored, by the way. So
we are very happy to have you here.
Do you have a philosophy of sales?
I have a philosophy not so much on sales as I do connecting.
Cool.
I like to think at the end of the day that sales is the result. If you have, think of all the great sales that have been made, some connection was made. That was really what happened. It could be a short-term moment, whether you were buying an item at a store or more notably, a consultative relationship, which is usually what I'm helping companies with, which are longer term, have many more zeros after it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole level of how you need to be to connect with someone. There's certain muscles, which I basically call your connecting core. And those that have those muscles really, really strong in the connecting core have the ability to really connect with their end target and make not only just one sale, but years of sales, great relationships. And that's the stuff that really helps grow businesses and make salespeople really go great, which is why I was so successful all those years.
Lou, when you were talking about the muscle thing and how they're connected, is it muscles from one part of the brain to the other, or is it from the brain like to the handshake, for example, when you're doing networking?
Well, there's lots of different muscles. This one really is actually the connecting core is these muscles, and I'm putting quotes around them, are the way you need to be. These are the muscles. I call them the safe. And to spell them out, the S is your super Y. A is authenticity, F is a fearless mindset, and E is empathy, which is probably the most important thing our listeners need to do right now, because empathy is not only all about sitting in the shoes of another and understanding what their world is like, but also really listening and connecting through listening, not just with your ears, with your eyes. So, great salespeople, you know this. You walk into a room and you can feel if it's a good vibe or a bad vibe. You can feel when, hey, I've got someone that's engaged. And to be able to capitalize and connect with people on that level, that's actually something that great coaches do. And so I actually coach top performers to learn how to do that even better.
How they can better teach someone how to do that if they're not born with it?
A great question. By the way, all these things, and this is important, a lot of people have a theory in life like, oh, you've heard this in the past. Well, you can't teach someone how to sell. I don't necessarily know if that is true or not. What I do know is that you can coach somebody on how to connect. And everyone has those different muscles at different levels. I actually, when I meet clients that I choose to work with, I have this scorecard that I use to see how their connecting core actually rates up. Some of them are fearless and, you know, you know, like Jennifer, and some of them are really, really scared, like Jeffrey.
Right. And I'm so scared. I can't move. I'm frozen.
I can tell.
Hang on a second.
Let me throw something at you just to make you think. Okay. Sure. If someone is smart and someone is self-starting and someone is happy, I believe I can teach them to sell. So you have to have a criteria about you, or you can't learn how to sell if you're not a smart person or you're not a happy person. Are you okay with that? I think that's true.
It's part of the base. Look, happy is also like when people are confident, they have that fearless mindset. They're not sitting in a corner in the shell, like in a shell, can't get out, like a turtle that needs to pop out. However, you're right. And the coachable thing, Jennifer, that you can work on is people need to embrace to sit in the shoes of their client. You know how often you go see like a PowerPoint presentation, and this, by the way, kills me. Someone comes in, they're a technology company or something new that's out there, and they show their capabilities presentation. And one of the first slides that they show, aside from their own company logo up there to say this is who we are and what we do, are a list of all the other clients that we have right now. Make it clear, the only people that matter in the room is the client and the target that you're trying to win.
Right.
You don't need to show any of those other logos. You have to focus on them, and you have to listen to their needs, ask them the questions on what they want to see in that presentation. Forget a stupid PowerPoint march of death. Understand what their needs are. Ask the right questions. And if you ask those questions, you'll start to understand the areas that you can cater that whole conversation to. So Jennifer, the answer to your question is you can coach everybody on how to do those sales processes that you need and how they can basically work on connecting with another. That's where the sale will be made.
I love that.
Yeah, that's really good.
I'm glad you do.
So you tell everyone where you live.
Yeah, so I live up in New York. I live in a lovely town, a little hamlet they call Chappaqua, New York, which is just outside. We have some famous neighbors around here. And I've lived in New York my whole life. It's actually really interesting. I grew up in Rockaway Beach, Queens. I was born in Brooklyn, grew up in Rockaway Beach, Queens. I never actually said where I went into high school, which was Great Neck, even to this day, which is where my parents still live, lived in the city. And now I've lived in Westchester for over 16, 17 years, which is kind of crazy.
Well, Westchester's civilized, isn't it?
Well, I mean, now that they kicked out all the guys from Long Island and New York and moved them down to Carolina, it's become so much more civilized.
So do you bump into the people, your famous neighbors on the wall?
Yeah, you have some famous neighbors.
So, no, I have a good story. Like, yeah, so obviously for those listening, the Clintons do live and legitimately on the other side of the tracks. I live on a different side of town than them. They're on the the one that requires more Secret Service people to run around town.
Wait, you don't have Secret Service people?
Well, no, not yet.
I thought you had a following of Secret Service people.
What's actually interesting is
no, they're not protecting you. They were
no, they're certainly not. They're actually getting coffee all day long, which is actually interesting because about a year ago, I saw Bill Clinton at Starbucks, and I was there actually.
He walks into Starbucks with his double pump vanilla almond milk caramelato.
Frappuccino.
This is the really fun part. I actually understand that. I think he jogs there and he runs there because he's pretty close to town. So he runs to the Starbucks. At least that's what I believe. Or maybe he's just hopping in on the Secret Service vehicles.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's there and he's very very friendly, obviously, as we all know. And he'll take pictures with people. And my daughter notices him and he's there. And he wants to say hello to the president, and you know, in his little voice, you know, he's like, "Hey, little girl, what's your name?" And she's like, she says her name, and he goes over and he sees me. Now, I want to rewind 10 years prior. In 2006, at the time I was working on Wall Street, I was at Merrill Lynch, and I was actually on a panel with three other panelists. I could not tell you what I was speaking about. It was this big conference with lots of people, but the keynote speaker was Bill Clinton. Clinton was supposed to speak before us, but he was running late due to whatever reasons, and now we ended up speaking afterwards. But when we left the stage, me and the other three panelists were walking in the back, and they're Secret Service people because Bill Clinton is about to go on. And we all have name tags, but we shake his hand, and you know, he says all of us, and he had been there for a while listening to us. Fast forward back to this Starbucks in 2016. My daughter says, you know, her name, and then I introduce myself, and I go, "Hello, Mr. President. My name is Lou Diamond." And he's like, "Lou Diamond, I heard you speak at the conference 2006 at the Waldorf Astoria. Oh, you sat with these three people and did all this and blah, blah, blah. My jaw drops. My daughter's jaw drops. Where she's like, Dad, you're famous. The president knows you. I think he does that with everybody. Now, here's the fun part about this story. I think I have spoken to about 10 other people who have met Bill Clinton, and I believe that he has this ability to do this with everyone. He has some kind of audiographic memory or something where it's not so much that he sees everybody, it's that he hears them and he knows.
Yeah, he remembers your Brooklyn accent.
Yeah. Well, let me make it clear. It's not my accent. This is mostly how I talk. Now, I think I've kind of lost most of my accent, Jeffrey. You know, even though you now live in Carolina.
Oh, yeah, no accent there.
Oh, bullshit.
There.
Yeah, well, it's just nasal accent. Is what it's called.
Yeah, you know.
Wow, imagine the power of that in connecting, though.
Yeah.
You know,
if
everyone had that.
Yeah, he's a master connector, and I'm hoping, look, that's what I'm trying to coach most of the people to do is to have that skill. And there is a place, by the way, where master connectors get together. And you take someone like the two of you and myself and other people, and you put them together, the potential of opportunity through connection is incredible, because master connectors, those with those four muscles really, really strong, are the ones who elevate it to the next level. They take things to, you know, you could take the examples of you know, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett are trying to get all of the multi-billionaires of the world to literally give their money to the Bill Gates Foundation so that they can help save the world. And that's what they're trying to do. And that is a true master connector club. And then you could dumb it down to another level. You get someone like Jeffrey Gittimer, Lou Diamond, Doug Sandler, and Jackie the Joke Man Martling, and you could put them in a chat room and you could pass around really big jokes all day long, which is what I've been doing for the last month.
I know, it's getting a little silly actually, but I stay in there.
You do. It's worth knowing.
How did you start in sales?
I was really young. My dad had a retail jewelry store in downtown Brooklyn. That's where the accent comes from. And maybe 10 or 11 years old, he started having me go to the store to work there, usually like on a weekend or Saturday, which was always cool. And by the time I was probably entering high school, I was working there for the Christmas seasons and all the busy seasons, like mm-hmm. Mother's Day and whatnot. And all throughout high school and even college, that was my summer job. And let me tell you, if you can work in a small jewelry store that was like 9 feet wide by 60 feet long and have every type of customer in a neighborhood where jewelry necessarily wasn't a need and certainly luxury
to
most. It
was an item to be stolen, wasn't it?
Yeah. Don't joke about this. We always had to have a male presence in the store because couldn't just have women in the store because in that neighborhood there was a theft issue. Mm. And literally having lock and key on every time you needed to take out an item. But to be able to communicate to someone, learn about them, find their needs, that's really where I started selling. And I'd actually argue that my ability to connect with people started in that very store and probably learned everything that I ever needed to know. Yeah. And then just carried it over into the business world after college and consulting and then a whole career on Wall Street.
That's cool. That's totally cool. And so you have this life experience in your family store. How does that transfer over to your life experience as a salesperson when you're working for Fortune 500 companies or even Fortune 100 companies?
It was really interesting that as I came into the work world and I knew nothing about corporate business from the first day I worked. Actually, I worked at what is now Accenture. It was Anderson Consulting back then, which was mm-hmm. a great way to learn about working in a corporate environment and professional services. I really think it did two things. One, it gave me an understanding on how to view and look at an organization and not only just understand what the individual I was working about, but what their whole business did. Every time, you know, I looked at something, I tried to relate to and saying, okay, why does this person need us? What can I do to help this person improve their world? That has always been what I'm about. It seems I'm naturally a giver. And I love to look at people and say, okay, what is their need? What is their weakness? What are the thing that they can be made better? How can I help that person do that? And it took several years of consulting and working in sales and always having that as my focus, is recognizing that that's what I do best. I actually love to work with the most amazing people and companies and make them even more amazing. It's what gets me off. It's what literally gets me excited. And I'm not doing it selfishly. I'm doing it selflessly. I'm always figuring out how I can help that person. And in some cases, I'm almost too giving.
Yeah.
I learned that in some cases that it's more important. Like, you got to always make sure that there's a component to your value and business that you do. And there's only so much time and energy you can give in a day. However, I've learned that the best way to do that is to help others do the same, because that multiplicative effect is what really is what I'm trying to get to the point Jennifer made earlier on. Imagine if the whole world had that ability to connect like Clinton did, or that other people do, or like you and I do through this medium. This is what I think my message is all about. And I recognize the power in it. And by the way, the financial rewards that can come from it as well.
Yeah.
So Lou, were you at Anderson during their ethical heyday?
I was gone by then. I actually was running sales at a company called Organic then. And yeah, when that was right at the Enron deal, actually, it's really funny. We pitched doing business with Enron when I was actually running this digital services agency business. I'd done a bunch of business in Texas. Compaq Computer was a client of ours and other companies. So we were down there and we were meeting the folks at Enron. And I had a lot of friends that I used to work in consulting who went to go work for this company. And I remembered coming back after going through their offices, and I knew a lot of people on Wall Street. I had done a lot of work on trading floors, both at what was Accenture and then Deloitte Consulting before venturing into the dot-com space with Organic and then moving to Wall Street. I knew and had seen what real looked like. And then I saw what was going on at Enron and I looked around. I go, I think this is a pretend operation. I go, it seems like it's too fast. I remembered seeing it going, something's not right.
Yeah.
And when all this stuff blew up and when you saw really what was going on, and obviously eventually, you know, those partners at Arthur Anderson Accounting, those are the ones who signed off on it. And talk about amazing, you know, dominoes falling. One bad set of partners at one group destroyed an entire, almost 100 years of a company. I mean, whatever, how many years it was at the time, of a company that just went straight down the drain. And it tell you something, those folks at Accenture had just changed their name from Anderson Consulting to Accenture a few years before that. Man, they were pretty happy.
Yeah.
was there any kind of tie to that? Did they see handwriting on the wall?
I don't know from where I sat. What I do know is from people that I eventually hired, ironically, when I worked at Merrill, that had resumes with them working at Enron. And there were certain areas that we knew to stay away from, certain types of fixed income securities divisions that we knew that those people might have been a little shady. And then there were people who were much junior who just were the bad, you know, the bad eggs that happened to be there a little late. Those are the ones that actually were great producers and helped in certain areas. But no, I didn't have the access to seeing that or knowing if they knew it. But what I do know is that, you know, like anything that goes up too fast, it's a great lesson. You always have to question speed. A lot of companies, even today, the ones that are organically building themselves and growing at a healthier pace, you know, don't have to try to, try to circumvent different ways to do things. And I think it's a healthy growth is what people look for now.
Totally.
Hopefully we don't forget that.
Yeah. So shifting gears, tell us about your podcast on Thrive Loud.
You know, you guys have had the experience. And by the way, I always love it because we're kind of neck and neck in the Overcast range.
Don't worry. We haven't started promoting yet.
Yeah.
We're teasing you.
It's also 2-1, you know, how it works. So there's nothing wrong with that math.
Nope.
Anyway, here's the fun part, that when I wrote the book, Master the Art of Connecting, I started going on shows like this and promoting it. And every time I got off the show, people said, wow, you have a really great voice and you have a ridiculously great name. You should be doing something in podcasting. And a lot of people have businesses that do this. And then I came across some folks that said, you know, this would be a great idea. And a podcast really does exactly what you want to do. You're trying to get the message about connecting. And you are connecting the world with all the people that I know, because I do know a lot of people and I do connect with them. And I wanted others to have the benefit of hearing some of these great connections that I have and learning about people that are thriving in their lives, their businesses, and their passions each and every day. And that's where ThriveLoud came from. Now, here's the irony was the name. Before I even came up with the podcast, my business is called Thrive, where we help the most amazing people grow each and every day. And I'm Lou D, L-O-U-D. And that was my handle on Twitter.
Oh, cool.
And it was my son who said, you know, we're trying to come up with a name for the podcast show. And he's like, you already have it. I don't understand. He says, it says Thrive Loud. I go, no, that's Thrive Lou D. And he's like, oh, that's really cool. And then boom, it just went from there, Thriving that's Loudly. Really and that's cool. Exactly what we love. So the name worked and Thrive Loud with Lou Diamond. And
your kid who you've paid for thousands and thousands of dollars over the years has finally begun to give you a return on your investment.
Yeah, that bill's about to go up triple with him going to college next year. So.
Uh-oh. Where's he going?
Yes, but no, it's going great that we've had unbelievable guests, not just people in business and entrepreneurs, but we've had some pretty famous people in the entertainment industry. Obviously, you've heard Jackie was a guest. We had Mary Carrillo on recently. I just interviewed last week David Robinson, the former NBA basketball Hall of Famer, which is going to be a fun show. Kate Snow from the Today Show, she's coming on in a few weeks, and some really incredible stories. I always find, as good as the famous people are that come on the show, it's the amazing business entrepreneurs and those that have gone through unbelievable journeys and had great successes that's what we want to listen to. That's
what's
actually
your favorite connection story that you've heard?
I like this one. And this just happened. This is something where, so I spoke like Jeffrey, I go around and speak and share this message of connecting. And I went up to a company's annual retreat. And I did a speech, and then we did a little mini workshop with their top sales team to help get them to work on some good listening exercises. And in that, the head of sales and I started talking. And sure enough, the head of sales was so taken by the message that he called me up afterwards and said, I want to introduce you to a whole bunch of other players. In addition, he gets, you know, sends an email out to two or three different people. And one of those people is someone I haven't seen in, I don't know, 25 years. And sure enough, this guy used to work actually at Accenture. And I see the name, didn't recognize it right away, called the person up. And we started talking exactly as we did right here. And then he says to me, he goes, you know, I've been a listener on your podcast for the last year. And I never knew that you worked with companies like this and did what you did. I'd love to have you come in. Cool. I'll let you know that the show had justified this connection. It brought me right to this guy. I walk into that room and there were four or five other potential opportunities that were right in front of me. I share this story. This is about a connection to me. The show, each of them had been listening to in different lights, and nobody had ever connected that what I was doing was something that they can relate to in their industry, which is something I got to work on. However, what a wonderful story, right? Here it was, work that I've did got connected. People have been listening to the show, they connected it. And from this, I'm now connecting others to it. That to me is what I love about, I guess, the most immediate connections. I can't think of, there's lots of those in my life where my small world tends to overlap. That one just happened last week. And I guess it puts a smile on my face because I'm not only helping these people, but they're also now coming back and helping me.
That's cool. It brings it full circle to when you were talking about giving, because your show, you're giving value, giving value, giving value. And then look at that.
That and Joel Apfelbaum, who is a guest of yours, who's coming on to Thrive Loud recently.
You will love him. He's
priceless. I loved him on your show. I thought he was great. And wait, we were sitting next to each other at this conference in New York for the YJP Association. He actually was leading our breakout group. And now I'm talking to him. We're exchanging cards. We meet. And the next morning, he's on your show.
He's definitely loud.
Oh, my God. He's a pisser and a ton of energy. And and his company's got some great things going on. And he's got his own show. So it's the podcast reciprocity.
Is that what it is?
Cycle.
He's a very insightful person. Very devout. Very high ethics.
I feel like a bad Jew when I was talking to him. I feel like I didn't live up to the expectations.
So did I.
I can't imagine what you felt like.
No, 3 weeks after he was here, we joined the synagogue.
That's a true fact. Well, that's not a joke.
No, it's a fact.
And he probably got on you for it, and he's going to make it. Soon you'll start doing learning lessons with
Look
him.
Look at that. He did a mitzvah.
We didn't actually join the synagogue. We joined a reform synagogue, which is...
Okay. Reform synagogue.
Almost like a synagogue.
Yeah. No, it's actually pretty good. It's
the Roman Catholic Church is actually more religious than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I'll tell you, getting back into spirituality is a good thing.
Everyone needs a little dose of it, is the way I would say it. You know,
I hadn't
it's like moderation and everything.
I agree.
We took my daughter, Gabrielle, who's 8, to the Kol Nidre service. And I'm telling you, she participated. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's good. Look, you need to have, and in the spirit of connection, people have that form of connection to them. And it's that's part of like who you are. You know, it's part of your heritage. And that's authentically a piece of you and obviously your daughter. And
I wanted her to understand the heritage. I think that's the most important part of it is, you know, we have a history.
Part of what I love doing, Jeffrey, when I connect with people and individuals and I'm all about learning about what they're about. I love those conversations. I don't care what their religion is or what mm-hmm. their background is. To me, that education of the value of this, just a quick side note story. We, my wife and I, my family, we've hosted Israeli soldiers in the past at our home. There's this program that's called Sahal Shalom. They come to New York, and in the spirit of connection, this is perfect. They're trying to connect the IDF here to the States. And these soldiers who have never been to America come and they're dressed in uniform and they go through all these different towns. It's an unbelievable educational experience for both them and for the people in our community to help understand what's going on with these Israeli soldiers. And we actually hosted two of them. One of them we were like a buddy family with someone where he lived every day. And then the next year we actually hosted someone. And the one we hosted was this gentleman who, his name is Anwar. He's Druze, which is not Jewish. He's from a sect of Northern Israel that they literally are very loyal to those that are running their particular country. It's part of their culture and the history of who they've been with. Supposedly, they're also the best food hosts and cooks you'll ever have. So we have this open invite to go to Israel and eat at his house.
That's pretty cool.
But that experience to learn about his life and what they do in a very secretive type of culture, which they don't even know that much about, part of the allure of their religion.
Yeah, like the Basques in Spain. I love that.
Yeah.
So
love that stuff.
So yeah. They think you're the typical American
Yeah, by the way, which is so true. And I always feel bad about that. Here they are going to Northern Westchester and seeing.
Yeah, they're going to go back and go, well, this place is amazing.
Look at the size of these homes. And look, the former president lives in the next door. So,
yeah. Yeah. Take them to
West
Harlem.
A little surreal. You're right. Right,
exactly.
Oh, man.
But
better than taking them, to East 132nd Street or something.
Yeah, you've made connections. Your business mantra, and I think it's a pretty good one because you can't make enough connections no matter mm-hmm. what you do. Jen in New York City was a BNI connector, and she was pretty damn good at it. She founded a couple of chapters, and she's an excellent. Excellent networker, and you can't say that, Jenny, but I can.
Ooh, thanks.
And it was all through the power of her connections. And those connections will remain her friends for probably forever, but at least for years and years.
You're taking a piece of all those people that you connect with. And I spoke at one of the BNI events. I was asked to come in. You probably know Jackie Frank, by the way.
Yeah.
Before we could talk about that. Yeah. So I was at her particular chapter and I got a chance to speak. And in so doing, what somebody said to me, which is always powerful, they can send you an email afterwards. You know, I took something from that. And that's what you do in those mm-hmm. connections. You're mm-hmm. taking a piece of you and relate it back to sell or die. As you're looking to... The ability to try to make a sale, if you recognize that the sale is a step in the process more of how you're making the connection, to me is much more important. Connect, the sale will happen. And not only will it happen once, it's going to happen again and again and again. And that being your focus is so important because you've given a piece of yourself to someone else.
And with that, we're going to bid you adieu. However, we are going to...
I'm really good at segue and ending to a show.
Oh, phenomenal. I couldn't have ended it any better if I wouldn't have said goodbye, my darn self. But Lou, you have enough of an understanding of connection to where we would actually like to have you back again.
Oh, and, that's spectacular.
And we will try to play with that. We have a whole week of bald guys, And we're going to make sure that you
so excited.
You fit right into that groove because you're smart and bald.
Ah, yes.
But please, please, audience, please connect with Lou because he's looking to connect with you. What's the best way to connect with you, Lou?
So everywhere in social media, you can find me at Thrive Loud. And that's on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, you name it. You'll find me there. Also, obviously, on LinkedIn. You can go to thrivepartners.net where you could find everything there is about that, or loudiamond.net to learn about me and have any speaking opportunities. And thriveloud.com as well bounces to all of those things. So
cool.
Look for Lou Diamond, Thrive Loud, and couldn't be happier to be on the show.
We're connecting as we speak.
Thank you
so
much.
Everyone out there, if you'll connect with Lou Diamond, you will be forever benefited as a result. Lou, thank you very kindly.
Yeah, truly my pleasure. Thanks again, man.
I gained information from that. I mean, I thought that was a really solid interview on the selling process without hardly mentioning the word sales.
Pretty impressive.
I thought. I think his whole concept is right on the money. It's all about challenging the salesperson to come up with their own why so they can transfer
their
belief.
Their super
and,
why.
Yeah, and transfer their belief. And it's all about making the connection more meaningful so they can build a relationship, not just make a sale.
Well, I was watching one of his videos on his website about identifying your super why.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about figuring out what your internal why is for selling whatever it is you're selling and being able to transfer your message and your belief in a way that the prospect will trust you.
Yeah, the passion of it. And yeah. And the conviction of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, how steadfast you are in your, well, you know, I think this is really a good thing for you. That's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
What you want to say is, this is the best thing you could possibly get, and I'm going to sit here until you say okay.
Well, and here's my personal why
right.
for trying to give it to you.
But so you it can't takes put it that way. You just have to deliver the why.
Right.
Yeah.
But you can't deliver the why unless you know what your why is. And I think so many people, so many salespeople wake up and say, okay, today I'm going to go into this kind of sales. I'm going to go into car sales. Well, what's your why? Why are you actually going into car sales?
Well, I think I can make a lot of money in car sales.
No, that's not your freaking why.
Right,
if you want to help people get the best cars on the planet for them
right.
and you have some uber passion about cars, then you might be a successful.
You can say to a customer, listen, I'm going to find the best car on the planet for you, even if it's not from me.
Right.
Is that fair enough?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. A real estate person, I'm going to find the best house on the planet for you, even if I have to go someplace else to get it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And he digs into a concept that I think is very challenging, not only for salespeople, but really anyone that's in the business of persuasion, which mm-hmm. is this idea that if you connect with someone, the sale will come. Because I think a lot of people identify themselves as salespeople and they think, I'm a salesperson, I sell. Mm-hmm. Whereas what I know that both of you would say and Lou would say is, no, you're helping people buy
correct.
and not sell.
That's mm-hmm. correct. And people will say, hey, it sounds like you're selling. No, I'm helping you buy. And my job is help, not sell.
I love this concept. You connect with someone, the sale will come. So I worked at a boutique clothing store in high school, and there was this concept that the other salespeople had that if our doors were open, the people would come. Okay, but it didn't always happen that way. If our doors were open, we were lucky when people came in the door, and we were even luckier when they decided to buy from us. And part of that, creating our own luck, was building our relationship with them because we were a boutique neighborhood clothing store
and getting them to
come back.
You're a destination, not a walk-by.
Oh, exactly, 100%. But you can't just open up your doors and expect people to show up.
So why don't you as salespeople today, when you're done listening to this amazing episode of Sell or Die, sit down and create your own
super
why.
Very humble, Jeffrey.
Sit down and write your own super why.
I love it.
And then refine it. And then refine it again. And then try to transfer it a few times and see how it works. And do it on the basis of, it may be a little bit risky, you may feel a little bit out of your comfort zone, but I promise you it's going to create sales.
Speaking of helping people, we've got a listener that has a question for the two of you.
Ooh, let's hear it, Jeff. Let's hear it, Doug.
Dwight. Yeah, let's hear it,
not
Louis.
Jeffrey. Let's hear it, Doug.
Dwight emails in and says, I greatly appreciate the wisdom, integrity, and respect that forms the basis of your sales training materials and podcasts that I have listened to. My goal is to get a job in RV sales and be a top producer, despite my limited sales experience and training. My plan is to get industry knowledge from a friend who is a top producer in RV sales in another state and sales training from you guys. Where do you suggest I start reading, watching, or doing?
The best thing you can do is find people who have an RV and go interview them and find out why they love it and film it and find out what trips they've taken that have been memorable in an RV and what fun they've had, what adventures they've had. And begin your own belief system by talking to people that have actually owned an RV.
And if you're going to sell a specific brand or work for a specific company, go to current clients of that company and find out why they chose that company when they were making that decision.
This is not, RV is not saving money. It's a lifestyle. And you have to look at it from the perspective of why have people chosen this lifestyle? Do they just like driving across the country in a bus and peeing in their own toilet? Or is this some destination that their parents did or their Aunt Nellie and Uncle John, and this is their early childhood memories of, traveling across the country and staying in a camper lot or an RV
lot? I'm going to make another suggestion.
Yeah.
Take the RV out, whatever's the most popular model you're going to be selling, take it out for a road trip of your own, even if it's just for a week, and get to know how it's used, what you like about it, because those are the things you're going to be able to best transfer to the customer.
The things that you make a personal connection
exactly.
with.
Exactly.
You know, this is perfect because it goes to everything we've talked about in this episode, because Dwight made the natural connection that most people make, which is, I'm going to sell RVs, so I should go speak to other people who sell RVs and do right. really well and ask them, whereas the next level that often salespeople are not aware of is, no, you need to talk to people who have bought RVs.
Right, mm-hmm. exactly.
And then you need to use it yourself.
The guy who's selling RVs may be an old-fashioned sales guy that drives all kinds of goofy-ass techniques.
Yeah.
The reality is people love RVs. They have campgrounds all over the country, literally all over the world for mm-hmm. RVs. And the object is to find people that love the lifestyle and can communicate about
it. And also, I'm sure there's Facebook groups and other online communities for RV people. Join those groups and yep. listen to what people are saying and get intel, get inside information about what they like.
And I don't think that you guys are saying that Dwight's initial instinct was necessarily wrong. I think if you go and talk to top RV sellers and you got a lot of information, you would get some valuable insights that may, and you may sell okay. But to get to that next level.
Exactly. What Dwight's initial instinct is initial. It's the start.
Yeah.
And it's not to put it down in any way, but if he wants to be the number one RV seller in the country, he has to go further than that and deeper than that.
And there's one other thing, Dwight, while we're answering your question and giving you $1 million worth of advice for nothing. I want to know if you have our address so you can send us part of your commission checks. But I think you should also have a route that you can take an RV out for a ride with the customer when they first arrive. And you just say, hey, mm-hmm. when's the last time you took a ride in a really cool RV? Because mm-hmm. we have one that's absolutely unbelievable. Before we start talking, let's take a ride.
I'd want a meal on the RV before I bought it, like see how all the appliances work.
I'd want to pee.
See if any of them, test the toilet.
See if any of them talk to me and have Google Voice Assistant
exactly.
in there.
Exactly. If they're smart RVs.
Right. Do they have Amazon Echo in there?
Yeah, I bet they do, actually.
It's going to park for me.
All right. We got to go. We got to head out. But this has been another amazing episode of Sell or Die.
I'm Jeffrey Gittimer.
Our sponsors.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we sponsors.
Yeah, it's very important. You know, we're sitting here drinking our Death Wish coffee.
Yep.
And we could not be so lively
without Death Wish coffee.
Death Wish coffee. So
I want to wish some of our listeners, the entire team of the Philadelphia Eagles, I want to wish them luck next week against the Minnesota Vikings. Crush their butts. I'm wearing an Eagles hat and an Eagles sweatshirt. In case my sweatshirt falls off, I'll still have my hat on. So,
oh, man.
This is the challenge for you guys. This is the beginning of the year. This is your time to figure out where your bacon lies and then go get it. This is a time when...
I like that.
This is a time when you're going to count on your relationships. You want to build your relationships. I recommend you have a cup of coffee with a customer every single morning this year. 250 cups of coffee with customers will bring you a ton of sales.
And if you bring them a Death Wish coffee bag, they will not complain.
Ooh, no one will ever complain. In fact, we give away tons of bags of coffee.
Oh, yeah.
And people become subscribers.
You know, we should do another contest coming up for a Sell or Die contest with Death Wish coffee.
I agree.
All right. But in the meantime, I just want to say thank you to our amazing producer, Mr. Doug Branson.
Yep. And I want to say thank you to you, Jenny, because you're incredible on this show. And we'd be jack nothing without you. I almost said jack shit, but I don't want to.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
It's a darn pleasure. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer.
And I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.